Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. I'm Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated and joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. It's Monday, February 6th, and we have plenty to talk about with regard to Tommy Rees. Notre Dame's offensive coordinator for the last 3 years has apparently accepted a job at Alabama to coach with Nick Saban. A great opportunity for him to move forward in his career, and thus Notre Dame is in an offensive coordinator search. Irish Illustrated put out a list of 12 names on Sunday. Pete Sampson and The Athletic put out a list of 8 names on, was that Friday or Saturday, Pete? I'm not sure.
When did Rees leave? I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably Friday or Saturday, and I know other outlets have as well. And, you know, before we go any further, I want to say that there's no perfect candidate. I want to state that first and foremost. And two, there's no perfect list because it is going to change as we move forward on this. Pete, you admitted that, you know, some of the guys you had on, you would have changed 48 hours later. I'm not sure that we would change anybody at this point, but we had other guys that were.
You have another 24 hours to go.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were others in consideration, but, you know, as I am apt to do, the list was long and it was already 12. So, I mean, it's kind of silly to put Charlie Weiss Jr. on there, although I think he's in the process of becoming a very good offensive coordinator. And I was intrigued by the name you threw out there, Slade Nagel from Tulane. I think he's got a promising future as well. But, before we get into that, let's talk about Tommy Rees going to Alabama, and I'm going to shut up for a bit and you guys talk about it.
Yeah, it's somebody put on the board, you know, where do you rank this for bombshells? It doesn't have anything to do with a bombshell. I mean, if somebody told me Tommy Rees might leave, I go, oh yeah, is it going to go to Alabama? That would have been my response if someone said Tommy Rees is leaving, because I think a bombshell would have been something different. Anything but the NFL and Alabama. We know there's been interest in Tommy Rees. It doesn't matter how everybody feels about everything Tommy Rees does. We know there's been interest in Rees. They like, I like how Tommy Rees's offense looks on film. And I think it's funny that, and I'm not ripping on anybody, I think it's funny that his pre-snap acumen is probably proven more impressive than the result post-snap. It's not what you want as an offensive coordinator, but it does get you looked at by people.
Was it Logan Diggs? Who was it that tweeted something out about his pre-snap motion?
Yeah, and Mickey too. But I don't even mean that. I just mean the way we know he manipulates defenses and how much respect people with offensive minds have for Tommy Rees. But then list all his numbers and show an Alabama fan where Notre Dame's teams rank on yards per play, points per game, and total yardage, and that's why they don't know who Tommy Rees is.
It's almost like there are things that are more important than stats sometimes when evaluating assistant coach. But Rees, whether it was Georgia or Alabama, my understanding, those were two staffs he was interested in as the OC. And
I wonder, that seems odd to me that you would want those.
Yeah, right. That you'd pick out those two, that you would want to either work for Nick Saban or work for Nick Saban 2.0, as a way to further develop as a career. Professional development was a very important part of the way Rees looked at this job. And all due respect to Marcus Freeman, but, you know, Nick Saban is arguably the greatest college coach of all time. I don't want to say it's a no-brainer to leave, but it's close to one. I know that, you know, your heart's at Notre Dame, and that may be true, but at some point you got to make a decision with your head. It's a very logical place, next step in his career. I was racking my brain the last time I covered a fourth-year Notre Dame offensive coordinator, and I could only find one in the last 22 years when I've been on the beat, and that was Mike Haywood in 2008. So 3 years is a long time.
And he got fired that year.
Yep. Well, he got air quotes fired and then was the head coach at Miami of Ohio.
Right.
So that was there was going to be a change anyway. It's good for Rees. There's a section of the fan base that's just like, there's this weird dynamic of like, oh, this is a great day for Notre Dame. They finally get out of this offense. But also Nick Saban wanted it. So I'm going to go with Nick Saban on terms of the evaluation of what's best.
To follow up what Tim said about not a surprise, we it hasn't been widely reported, but we have said it. It's been in print and it's been in our podcast. So when Brian Kelly, after the Camping World Bowl, the win over Iowa State, when Brian Kelly was deciding whether Reese would be the full-time coordinator, I mean, I have this on an extremely good source. He was due to go see Nick Saban in Alabama, and that was that. He was named the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. So we've known for a long time. Now, I don't think that that was for the coordinator job.
No.
Is he right, because right. he had only coordinated the Camping World Bowl, but probably the quarterback position, and so we knew that Nick Saban had a respect and appreciation for what he did, and so no, it's not a complete surprise, especially when you saw that a couple of the candidates to replace Bill O'Brien had fallen off. So,
don't you think? I think if somebody said, "Hey, Tim, Tommy Reese left Notre Dame," and you're like, "Where?" And he took a vacant MAC head coaching job that just came up.
There's
you'd be like,
no
"Whoa,
way
that would be the bombshell." No. That this is career development, as Pete said, with a step towards his career, which is the NFL.
Yeah, and Tommy Reese, the only other. I mean, Alabama, Georgia, and the NFL. I mean, I don't think that there really would have legitimately been anybody else. And frankly, I mean, just from the outside looking in, I think it's a, you know, Pete, I don't know what you've heard, but I'm not sure that all of Team Reese and all of his advisors said, okay, yeah, go ahead and go to Alabama. I
don't think it was like automatic, because I think that he was of two minds there. But when I saw him at the airport before he was about to take off for Tuscaloosa, I mean, I just asked him and I was like, you know, is this, you know, kind of the last step or the first step? And he's like, you got to go down there and figure out whether this is a good place to be or not. You know, you can't say yes from a distance, but I think just in terms of like making a decision with professional development being the first priority, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But there are other things in play than professional
development. I doubt very much whether all of his questions were answered in his brief visit to Tuscaloosa. They can't be, but yeah. No, I mean, I give him a lot of credit for saying, you know what, I'm going for it. The opportunity is there, and I'm going for it.
That was one thing I heard from people who know him, like in the industry. It was like, he's been, has an eye on this level of job for a minute. But I still give him credit for making the jump.
Yeah. And Pete, I want to go back to something you said that, like, you side with Saban on his decision of looking at what Tommy Reese brings to an offense more than the random person. I completely
agree. Do you have a counterpoint on this one?
No, I completely agree with you. However, my counterpoint is he's also not the only one capable of it. Like, this is not, oh my gosh, where does an offense possibly go from now? It's you move on to another coordinator with really good ideas, like Tommy Reese's really good ideas, and they can be different good ideas. And I'm pretty sure, knowing Marcus Freeman, that recruiting acumen will be involved in this decision, because I want to point this out as fast as possible. Sorry for over talking here. If you bring in a really good coordinator for 2 years and you have a top tier offense and you make two major bowls or one playoff game and one camp, win a playoff game and go to the Camping World Bowl, you've done two successful things other than winning a national title. If he doesn't recruit guys in, your next coordinator coming up in 1 or 2 years, because this guy's going to leave. You don't bring, as Pete said, they don't stay four. And if he's good, he's going somewhere else to the NFL or something like that. Talent procurement is huge in this situation. The reason this job looks so good is because the running backs are good and they have Joe Alton, Blake Fisher, and they brought in a transfer quarterback that's outstanding, and they have CJ Carr coming in and all that. I know that there will be recruiting acumen involved in this. It's just more important than ever in a transient college coaching fraternity to bring in talent for the next guy.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I do want to point out a couple of things before we move on to the potential offensive coordinators in Notre Dame. One, Pete, you mentioned stats. We are in a business where, in order for me and Tom Lloyd to present a list of 12 guys, what else do we have to go on? I mean, mainly statistics and rankings. And so if for you look at our list, you will see all of that. But the point I'm trying to make is that is not a complete picture, and everybody wants to just look at stats and rankings, but it's unfair. For example, Jared Parker, who is on the Notre Dame staff, we don't expect him to get the job. And I know that there was some, I think he lost control of play calling in his second season, or I'm not exactly sure how that all broke down. But like, if you look at Jared Parker and you say, okay, where did they rank in 2020? Well, they were 85th in this and 75th in that. Oh, he sucks. He's just average. Well, what did he take over? He took over in an abysmal offense that improved by 95 yards per game, 1.1 yards per rush, 14% increase in red zone touchdown percentage. So now I hear I'm throwing more stats out, but you know, I know this high school coach who went to a state championship game and the next year he went to 8-18. Did he get really stupid in the next year? I don't think that that's the case. Sometimes it's a little bit beyond your control, no matter how good or bad of a coach you are. That's the only point I wanted to make there. Secondly, Tim O'Malley, you predicted over on 1.5 assistant coaching changes, correct?
All the math, not the people. Do as they do, not as they say. This is coaching and everything.
And that's for another topic, because there has been some speculation about L. Golden. Pete, I think you made the comment that you think he's staying. Irish Illustrated's stance on that is that is not resolved.
No, I wouldn't. I would say if there's a defensive coordinator position opening with the Cincinnati Bengals,
which could happen because they're up for the Arizona head coach.
What my point is, today he's staying. His intention is to stay. So I thought that just sort of the idea of like, oh, I don't think he's looking around. But if jobs open that he's interested in, there you go. The Bengals DC is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Does it necessarily have to be a coordinator's job in the NFL?
That's my understanding. We may get conflicting info on that, but yeah,
I'm not positive about that.
You know, my thought on that, the Notre Dame defensive players and the linebackers have had three coordinators and three position coaches in the last 3 years. And a fourth coordinator and a fourth position coach for the linebackers in the unit is not something I think anybody wants. Not that you can stop Al Golden from becoming the defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, of course. Right. Although that would have been funny 3 years ago. You'd be like, why would you want to be the coordinator of the Bengals? That's a terrible idea. But now it's a good idea. Yeah. And that would be a loss for me. I know there's people go back and forth on Golden, and without saying anything else about him, four coordinators, four linebacker coaches for these defensive players and these linebackers is not a great way to go through your four-year career with any continuity in defense.
No, here's what I'd say, just on Golden real quick. When the University of Cincinnati job opened up, they really wanted to talk to him about it. And he said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm good at Notre Dame. So that's where I say, like, he's not looking to leave because of Notre Dame. But if there was a DC job in the NFL that interested him, Cincinnati in particular, then you got to be hyper aware of that if you're Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman.
I was not aware of that opportunity in Cincinnati, and I find that to be pretty interesting, especially since they're moving to the Big 12. That's a pretty attractive job. Okay, real quick, and I have my eye on the clock here, Jack, for segment one, because I know we'll talk about these guys in segment two, but I do want to read, Pete, you want me to read your list of candidates?
Can I just read it and edit out the ones that I wish that I didn't put on there?
Yes.
So yeah, okay. So Paul Christ, I would, Josh Gattis, Joe Moorhead, Slade Nagel, Jared Parker, Warren Ruggiero, Brandon Streeter, but that is only if Jared Parker got the job and you're looking for a quarterback's coach only, which I think people kind of saw the name and skipped reading it. And then Charlie West Jr., who I would not have included after kind of talking to some sources on Friday and was told that like play calling experience is a high priority for this.
Right. And I just, you know, again, lists are like, we have a new Ohio State offensive coordinator, Brian Hartline, on the list because we know that he's close with Marcus Freeman, and Marcus Freeman almost undoubtedly had a conversation with him when the position opened up, but he's not a quarterback's coach. He's not an experienced play caller OC. He hasn't been an OC. So, you know, so like when you make out a list, I think people look at it from a couple different perspectives. I know there's a list out there of who I think should Notre Dame should consider for the coordinator's job, which I would never put a list out there because I think that's, you know, I don't know why my list would matter, especially since I haven't vetted these guys. I haven't studied their offenses. I don't know. A lot of people are asking us, who would you like? You know, I'm intrigued by, I think Joe Moorhead's an accomplished offensive coordinator. I appreciate the body of work over time that Andy Ludwig from Utah has put out there. I'm intrigued by Jason Candle very much, the success that he's had at Toledo. I'm very much intrigued by Brian Johnson, who's going to be in a Super Bowl this weekend with the Eagles. And I'm very much intrigued by Sean Lewis.
Yes.
Who did a great job at Kent State and is now the OC at Colorado. But that's always changeable in the transient, to use that word again here in the podcast, in the transient world of college football coaching. So, I mean, I just want to, this is not the definitive list. And in 5 days from now, when a couple of the names seem silly, it's because I'm not sure that'll necessarily be the case of our list, but it's just how it works. That's
clearly not the definitive list because you don't have Gruden, Urban Meyer, or Don Shula on there. So
we tried
Kingsbury.
We tried to come up with a list that we thought was realistic, as opposed to throwing out names like Ron Paulus or people that you know, just don't have a chance to be the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm so one of the things.
No offense to Ron Paulus, right. But I mean, let's be real here.
When Matt and I, Fortuna and I, put the list together, it was like Wednesday night or Thursday morning. Like, it was obviously in advance of what was going down. But by Friday evening, I had talked to enough sources that were like, one, play calling experience was high priority. But also, I was told that there's been a lot of NFL interest in that, in the job, which, like, I didn't really have a good handle on who that would be. I think the guys on your list, Tim, probably are some of the guys that would be, but that's just something to keep in mind. And it's like Marcus Freeman figures out, okay, which can I check all the boxes with this hire? And if I can't, what's the most important? And we'll talk about that in segment two for sure.
I think it's impossible to check all the boxes, but NFL interests or guys connected to the NFL, Byron Leftwich, Greg Roman, and Brian Johnson. I don't know if I'm missing anybody, but we'll get to that in segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
This is Mike Brown, former Notre Dame Leprechaun, here to share the Leprechaun's Game Day at Notre Dame, an officially licensed children's book that celebrates the magic of a football Saturday at Notre Dame. Follow me on an adventure from step off under the Golden Dome to ND Stadium with this perfect gift for Fighting Irish fans. Visit www.lepgameday.com and enter Irish to get your author signed copy today. Go Irish!
We are back with segment two, burning up the boards. The first question from MMB4. With a new OC, will the other offensive position coaches change or remain in place? They all seem very strong and great recruiters.
I don't know that. I mean, is Harry Hiestand a great recruiter? Is that what he's talking about? Or is he talking about the candidates?
He's talking about the current coaches, but I think Harry Hiestand's considered so very strong that not being a great recruiter might be overlooked.
Fair enough. I doubt that it's going to be somebody other than a quarterback coach among the people on the list that we had that is not a quarterback coach would be Den Brock. But again, we don't expect Den Brock to come back for a third term. Parker, we don't expect him to get to Heartline. We don't expect him. So I wouldn't anticipate that. I may have jumped the gun a little bit about staffing, I'm just going to leave it at that, as far as, you know, potential changes. O'Malley's on top of all that, but I think it's going to be a quarterback coach at almost 100%.
I mean, you might be asking also, because I've had a few people people send me messages, is Reese taking someone with him? He's not a head coach. He's not telling Nick Saban we need to hire this running backs coach. I mean, he can say, I would like this graduate assistant or up and comer in the staff to come along. You know,
Johnny Allward is a grad assistant that Tom Loy reported is going to Alabama with him.
Still has to be vetted by somebody else besides Tommy Reese to go to Alabama and join that coaching staff. So it's not really up to Reese to bring those guys.
No, I mean, it's like with the other coaches in place, I guess is, you know, I think back to last off season, it certainly seemed like there was a time when Mike Elston was definitely coming back and Lance Taylor was definitely coming back.
All of them. Nobody wanted to leave. Remember?
Other than Quinn and Alexander, we thought like the rest of the entire staff might be returning.
We didn't think McNulty would get a coordinator's job.
Right. No, we talked to him.
So that's, you have to allow for that. I don't like, you know, could Dylan McCullough get a job in the NFL again? I don't know.
Called Stuckey.
Right. Yeah. All that is possible. So I think that's where O'Malley's 1.5 over under.
I'm all in a little bit better. All in on O'Malley's math here moving forward.
Well, they lost Laurinaitis, which is like losing a defensive.
No, God, we've barely been able to process this when Reese left.
So, I mean, it looks like they're all going to remain in place, but we're not sure. Question from Hayden Adam Z. I recognize it's highly unlikely Freeman goes this route, but thoughts on Chip Long as potential offensive coordinator candidate? He's familiar with Notre Dame, great recruiter, seemed to get along with Heistand, and not a bad play caller.
If there was an opening at tight ends coach, I would consider it. As offensive coordinator, I definitely would not.
I just can't see it happening other than Chip Long has coached there before and had success with his offenses, but it's, as I said before, I like Tommy Reese as a coordinator. There's other coordinators where people are going to like, and by the way, I want to throw this out there to most of you listening. You are going to hate the next coordinator too.
No, next season, I think you're going to love the next coordinator.
And then you're going to hate him.
Because Sam Hartman is here.
Yeah. And then you're going to hate him though.
Yeah. Possible. Because his offense will be bland. I saw that again. Tommy Reese's offense is bland. That is just false. It's false. You can say a lot of other things, but his offense is not bland. It's not. Do you agree with me on that?
Yes, I agree with you. That's the bland part is
ridiculous.
You could say it's not effective enough and no one can argue with you. That's fine.
You know, I mean, and a couple people have pointed this out, Chip Long, not a match with Marcus Freeman and his approach. I would agree with that. I mean, I think it'd be more likely that, Brian Kelly couldn't bring him back because he fired him because of it, the first time around. It's just, that's not going to happen.
With Marcus Freeman as a recruiter.
Yes, he's a good recruiter. Somebody said he's not a good recruiter. He's a very good recruiter.
Yeah.
Very good. Get along very well with Harry Heistand. And he wasn't a bad play caller. Of course not. He was a good play caller, but so was the new offensive coordinator at Alabama.
They're all bad play callers eventually, Tim. All of them. They're all eventually going to disappoint you.
Again, Tommy Reese's greatest fall at Notre Dame tied in with Brian Kelly was he didn't have enough skill position to work with. That was the main problem. His offense, his play calling is not bland.
We have a double question here. First from Sean OD64. Do you have a sense of what qualities Coach Freeman will be looking for when it comes to a new offensive coordinator? Would he favor a dogged recruiter over a guy with NFL play calling experience, for example? What other factors do you think he's weighing the most? And play like a champ 7. Similarly, rank the following in order as what you think should be most important to Marcus Freeman. 1, ability to recruit. 2, play calling experience. 3, culture fit.
Let me start with the second question. And the third criteria listed there is culture fit. That's not that's not something that you rank. That's baked into the job at Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman. So that's the only thing I would take fault with. And I don't.
You're saying it's an eliminator? basically, if there's no culture fit there. So you just got to kind of go from there. Okay.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. And then, yeah, I mean, it's just very difficult to rank things because they all blend together. And it's like, you know, ability to recruit. If you're the offensive coordinator and play caller, I think that has to take that. If you're going to put percentage on it, that has to be the highest percentage. Certainly recruiting is important. Marcus Freeman has made that very, very clear.
Question for you is recruiting, not the inability to be a great recruiter. Is that a negator?
I don't think you have to be great.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be bad.
Okay. You cannot be bad. So that's a negator. Good is not. Good recruiter, right. Great play caller. Great recruiter.
I think so.
Good recruiter, great play caller, or great recruiter, good play caller.
It's got to be great play caller first. I mean, you have Marcus Freeman's your head coach. You just can't be a bad recruiter.
It matters if you think Trevor Lawrence can make up for your play call, that type of thing.
But then you get into a situation where you think DJ Uiagalelei can make up for your play calling because he was also a five-star prospect, or Kate Klubnik, et cetera. But my understanding is play calling experience will be number one. Recruiting and culture fit can either be 2 and 2A or however you want to do that. I've also been told that like the ability to play like some tempo will be important. Not saying they're going to be a warp speed offense next year, but the ability to play with more speed than what they did last season is something under consideration.
Relating well with players. And I don't think that's always baked in to the.
Well, it's culture fit, you know?
Well, that's true. No, that's true. You're right.
I think that they will have a better culture fit at OC next year than Reese. I do think that the do your effing job while everyone loves it on a message board, probably not the way Marcus Freeman would like that to operate.
I think that specific moment, it was unfortunate that it was revealed the way it was. And so that in and of itself is not an eliminator, but what you said, culture fit and relating to players, I do think that will be upgraded with the next offensive coordinator.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be like, do we think that's the only time that happened? Like, I think that happened regularly on Tuesdays, right. Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Yes. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess I'm only pushing back a little. That do your effing job is different than what I view Marcus Freeman at behind closed doors coaching his team too. I think Marcus Freeman coaches his team very hard behind closed doors. And I think it's one of the reasons we're not behind closed doors watching him coach his team as much as we used to be with Brian Kelly. I'm not saying language. That language isn't, you can't have a 5-minute conversation on Tommy Reese getting caught cussing on tape. You know, that's not... He said what everybody felt, for crying out loud. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. It was,
from a coaching perspective, something dramatic and drastic was absolutely necessary at that point.
Look, we make fun of a lot of people for saying, why not Angeli? And all three of us at the half were like, if this goes on for another half, it's Steve Angeli. Yeah. So that's how bad that was. I just think Freeman, you know, I'm not saying cultural fit's not huge. I just think Freeman... I guess I'm trying to define what Freeman's looks for in cultural fit that wasn't there for Reese. And I don't think it's coaching hard and being and cursing, because Harry Hiestand's one of his coaches.
No, but I just think it's a better line of communication and relating to the player on a regular basis. Does that
I can
make
see that. Sense? I can see that.
You agree with that, Pete?
Yes.
What was the last thing I was going to? Oh, yeah. I think it, to your point, Tim. Coaching hard in practice, I think Marcus Freeman coaches harder in practice than Brian Kelly did in his last few years at Notre Dame.
Yeah, not necessarily Kelly's first year where he still had the Cincinnati thing
that
going.
That was different. Yep. And part of that was, you know, was brought on or forced upon him as they made the transition following the 2016 season. Question from Honk for Hagen. Is it safe to assume Marcus Freeman, once the offensive coordinator in place by the start of spring practice, will we start to hear news about interviews this week? Considering how quick Alabama got Reese, I assume we can move somewhat quickly once the list is made.
I mean, they have to have an offensive coordinator in place before spring practice. So that's that part's done.
Yep. We still don't know a date on that.
I believe that keep an eye out for, I'll pull it up. I think it's March 22nd, a Wednesday.
So
probably so later.
All of it in 4 weeks.
Post Notre Dame spring break. So spring practice will be a little bit different.
So there is. So again, the timetable questions. It is February 6th. The urgency of naming a coordinator right now has really, really been diminished. So before the start,
I mean, it's important, but I would push back on the question of like how quickly Alabama named their, because they went through Ryan Grubb first,
right?
And they went through somebody before. I'm trying to who their first choice was, but it took time to get to Reese. So I wouldn't say that like Alabama did it. Like they got, once they found their guy, it was quick, but there was some time was taken before they got to there. And I mean, I think that last year I was looking back over like when I published like defensive coordinator lists, like it was Elston left. And then like 4 days later, and then there was another list 2 weeks after that. So it may take longer than I think fans may generally want it to.
I believe that as we move forward in our professions, guys, that making lists of coaches is going to be at the forefront of our job many, 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 many times. Head coach coordinator goes without saying, but the same thing happens with, I mean, we saw it with receivers coach last year. I mean, the same thing happened. So that's really something to look forward to.
This question is hard.
It's hard.
It is. Yeah. Well, no, Tim, it's going to be harder for, if we're doing it for position coach, it's going to be harder. No one had Dylan McCullough on the brain right before Dylan McCullough was on the brain. Well, that's tough.
Head coach
is the easiest one.
Yeah.
Head coach is clearly the easiest one to try to make a list for Notre Dame. Yeah. All right, this is from East Coast Irish, and I'm not, you guys might be able to understand it better than me, because I failed to remove any of these factors except for one. East Coast Irish, removing every factor, including cultural fit, recruiting, potential, football IQ, quarterback development. Do you think Reese's results were good enough coordinating the offense? Because if that just means statistically, then
I mean, all of those, you can't set those aside. All of those impact the play calling and the yardage and the rankings
I guess he says, are the results good enough? The results weren't good enough because without doing the dumb, they rank this, 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 and this, they had a terrible offense in two of the four losses and a poor offense in the first one that might've been part, not wasn't part of the plan to have a poor offense, but they were a little hamstrung in that first game, the way the approach was to stay close to Ohio State. So he had a really bad offense in three of four losses.
This is a weird question.
Yeah.
Because it's like, other than that, how was the play Mrs. Lincoln kind of question?
You know what?
Like,
you could say
eliminated way too much stuff.
Remove cultural fit, because that's from the outside, from people listening, and remove recruiting, because you could say, okay, here's your players, go find a way to win.
Yeah. I mean, fair? I thought the offenses were fine. To good. They certainly had some good moments.
The blast one.
They had some absolute awful moments too. But again, it's like Nick Saban would say yes, the offense was quite good. Thank you. I'm hiring this guy.
But he's using football IQ and potential for sure.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, he's not eliminating that stuff.
What was the last significant play call that Tommy Reese made?
It was a good one. It was that screen back to Mitch Evans.
Yeah, where I'm standing on the sideline, and here comes Jaden Thomas, and he's wide open. I'm like, throw Jaden Thomas the ball.
which is what
Tommy Reese wanted everybody else to think, which is what the South Carolina defense thought.
And he wants a bottom line. I get this question now. I now get the question.
Okay,
He should have not used any of those words, though. He should have said, forget everything about Reese that you like or have forgotten or don't like. Were his results good enough at Notre Dame? He's asking that question.
East Coast Irish, that's fair. Were they good enough? Pete, you just said they were good to fine. Good to fine. And most would say that's not good enough at Notre Dame, and I agree. I mean, I said it a billion times. I think the stats would have been better and he would have been a more effective play caller. There wasn't the plays that he called. He didn't have enough. Did they have enough skill position this year, a wide receiver?
Nope.
I mean, they didn't and they haven't. Thankfully Kevin Austin was eligible and healthy enough to play the year before. Because yeah. Where would they have been then?
No, I mean, they botched a lot of recruiting stuff along the way. That happens a lot of places, but Notre Dame, that it was probably felt a little bit more acutely. But again, I get back to Nick Saban thought it was good enough. So whether I thought it was good enough or East Coast Irish _ thought it was good enough, we're all amateurs here.
Yeah, East Coast Irish ask questions again. And Tim, thanks for deciphering for me. I'm not very smart sometimes.
Yeah, I get, once I reread it a few times, I get he was saying, bottom line me, this was
it. Yeah, I get that. All right, question from Blue Chip Man. Your prognosis on how well Tommy Rees does at Alabama with all the advantages that program offers on a scale of 1 to 10, where will he peak at Alabama the next couple of years? And I did change this question a little bit, Blue Chip Man. Mainly because of the previous question. So how do you think he'll do at Alabama?
I think peak will be year two when the quarterback is more developed, since they have a quarterback competition going on now. And I think they'll be in the playoffs and challenging for the playoffs. It's that, whoa. I think Tommy Rees is just the coordinator that needs to get them close to the playoffs one of these next 2 years and also in one. There we go.
Yeah, it's just like...
This way, if he doesn't get them there, he won't be there very long.
No. Well, it's, I mean, look at the past offensive coordinators there. They either get Power 5 jobs, head coaches, or they're NFL coordinators, or sometimes they're NFL coordinators and then they become NFL head coaches. You're talking about Loxley, Sarkisian, Daboll, O'Brien, Kiffin. Like, it's a
wow.
It's an assembly line of career development for OCs there. So I would say, you know, is Rees going to be the next one off that assembly line? It's been a minute since Saban has missed on an OC. I don't think he's going to miss on this one, but yeah, I'd say he's Rees is probably there for 2 years. I'll give it a 7. What I'm really interested in is him going down there where a place where winning a national championship is a birthright, opposed to working at Notre Dame where it's an aspiration. Like if there's a Marshall game or a Stanford game down there, you get fired the next day. Like here, we're just like, well, you know, we're trying to come up with reasons why it happened and they can improve and we can have a growth mindset. No growth mindset at Alabama. Like, you're out. That's it. It's over. They fired an OC in the playoffs 1 year. he was asking for it though. He's always asking for it.
Those are all great points, Pete Sampson. When you list the offensive coordinators that moved on to bigger and better things, that's where it's really, really, really impressive. And that's why Tommy Rees is a traitor. Really? Are you in? It's his life. It's his career. It's his opportunity to coach with Nick Saban in Alabama.
And certainly people took the speech last year.
He spent 40% of his life affiliated with Notre Dame. I mean, good Lord.
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one. He was on staff twice as long as anybody else.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, where will he peak at Alabama in the next couple of years? I mean, I think he's going to do very, very well. I think
Alabama will win a playoff game in the next 2 years. I'm going to go against math. Alabama will win a playoff game in the next 2 years.
Which is like a 5.
Right.
Like a 7. A 7 is a 7.5 would be one national title. A 10 would be 2 in 2 years. Like, that's the expectation down there.
But again, that's why I give him credit, man. You take it on. He took it on. I mean, Notre Dame is insistent that the pay is the same, or at least they would match, or it's around equal. I would imagine it's around equal. Yeah. It may be a little bit more, you know, probably not enough that would sway Tommy Rees one way or another to go or stay. It's the opportunity to play. I mean, it's his career. God bless him. I mean, go for it. You just, the greatest coach in the history of college football or thereabouts just offered you the OC job at Alabama. I go for it, man. I admire the fact that he has the confidence and balls to say, I hell yeah, I'm ready for this.
That's why it's like, it's not a lateral move. I know people get sort of like, oh, it's OC. Like it's not a lateral move. There's nothing lateral about it other than the name, the title of your job on the door.
That's more ridiculous than saying that's saying it's a lateral move.
That's just dumb. That's just silly. It's just, he should have gone to Georgia if he wanted the easy way out. You see this? That schedule? Georgia's going to be win every game by 30, except for the game they win by 15 because they made a bad game on it. Like, this is insane. Yeah. They barely beat Missouri, so they're going to win every game by 30 and beat some random team by 4, but that's still going to happen. That's...
Well, they do need a new quarterback.
Might need a new OC.
They might not need a new quarterback for this one. Yep.
Where are we at, Tim?
We are on pin and pull. What recruits might be affected, or recruitment might be affected by Reese's departure? Are there any current offensive players that could benefit from a fresh start with the OC? So that's two questions, really.
I don't think recruiting is going to be altered. It's not going to be altered with CJ Carr. Current offensive players that could benefit from a fresh start. Maybe you have a better plan for Chris Tyree. I don't.
Yeah, that's a hard. I never got the feeling Reese.
The better players play. So.
Yeah, I don't think Reese was holding Merriweather back. No. I mean, I think the way I say that is, I think Reese really wanted Tobias Merriweather to be out there. I don't think there was anything about him not wanting Tobias Merriweather out there.
I think the quarterback position will enjoy a fresh start across the board. I mean, I realize Sam Hartman's probably like, are you kidding me? But
I wouldn't include him, but you can see
Angeli, Buckner, Minchie hasn't been here long enough, but I do think Angeli and Buckner probably welcome a fresh voice in that room.
I would agree with that, Pete. I mean, as far as
I don't think Reese has anything to do with Lorenzo Styles.
No, I don't think so.
It's not like he's holding guys back. I mean, Merriweather will develop. He just wasn't ready to roll out of the gate last year as a freshman. That's not unusual. You know, Alton Fisher screwed everything up for everybody for freshmen, because, you know, the expectation, especially when it's offensive linemen, but some guys just aren't ready, especially if you're not an early entry guy, although not all early entries certainly emerge right away. Anyway, that's open-ended. Question from Penny Cowers from the offensive coordinator candidates list. Who, in your opinion, checks all the boxes that Notre Dame is looking for from a coaching scheme, ND personnel, personality fit standpoint that you'd like to see be hired to take Notre Dame to that next step?
I'm going to cede to Pete here because I want to say I'm approaching it from logic again. It's really hard for me knowing that a great offensive coordinator hire will last 2 years. A great hire.
Beyond 2 years, you mean?
Yeah. Why would a great hire be gone? Pete just said he hasn't covered one for four. Mike Haywood wasn't a good offensive coordinator necessarily for Notre Dame compared to what you're looking to hire now in the modern era. So you think the best offensive coordinator they could bring in is going to be here coaching CJ Carr's junior year?
No, but if they hire a mediocre one, he's going to get fired. So,
right. I guess my point is, I don't think you need to hit every box. I think the checking every box thing.
First of all, that's impossible.
Yeah. I don't know what I would prioritize here. I still go back to, I have the guy that has never said this in his life, that it's so important to bring in talent to coordinate. We can't say, look at Tommy Reese. We loved Tommy Reese's football IQ. Yet he didn't bring enough talent to coordinate. And that's when they lost to Marshall and scored 10 against Ohio State with 6 straight punts and lost to Stanford. So you needed more talent. I think recruiting is very important for the next offensive coordinator.
Does he have to be?
Well, yeah.
We talked about good. He can't be bad. Good's not enough.
I say good's not enough for the recruiting.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think you can check every box, but like, hey, I will list two guys that I think would be very good and like close to checking all the boxes. You guys can do the same. Like, if they hired Joe Moorhead or Sean Lewis, I think those would be, that would kind of thread the needle on somebody who is not looking for a new job, not a climber, experienced play caller, understand what recruiting looks like at the highest level. And I think Marcus Freeman can benefit from somebody who's been around the block a little bit more. Like, I don't think that hiring the next Tommy Rees would be my move here if I was Marcus Freeman. I wouldn't hire an inexperienced play caller. So those two guys, I mean, you could throw Jason Candle in there too, but like those three guys, I think all would be excellent hires for Notre Dame.
Guys that check the most boxes for me would be, on again, going from Irish Illustrated's list of 12, would be Joe Moorhead, Andy Ludwig, Sean Lewis, Jason Candle, and Brian Johnson. So the only one in the NFL is Brian Johnson, but he's been successful at Houston and Florida and Utah, and he's now coaching in the Super Bowl this coming weekend. So those would be the five guys that check the most boxes for Notre Dame, cultural fit, et cetera, for me.
Yeah, I love the Ludwig notion. I don't know about his recruiting acumen. Other than that, Ludwig would be my choice, I think, for Marcus Freeman as a second-year coach to lean on someone, and who might stay for 3 years, as Pete said, and isn't looking. He's not an absolute climber. No one stays for 4 or 5 years in offensive coordinator position at Notre Dame because you move on with brighter futures.
But Ludwig's 58.
Yeah.
That might make him a little bit more inclined to stay.
I mean, that's what I was looking at as well. I don't know about his recruiting ability, because Utah does more with less than other places do. It's about doing more with more.
He's been a coordinator for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And that's why, you know, you hesitate to say they should get this. I don't know all these guys. In 24 hours, 48 hours, I don't know everything there is to know about these guys.
Pete, you made a great point, and it goes back to our Mike Bray commentary. I said I want Jay Wright from Hofstra to come to Notre Dame.
Yes.
I don't want Tommy Rees to come to Notre Dame, the next Tommy Rees to come to Notre Dame. You're right about that's how I feel. I think Notre Dame's basketball search is get the next up and comer for 10 years.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame's long-term football
play there.
Yeah. That's not the search for Notre Dame's offensive coordinator.
All right. Good question. A lot to cover there. Question from the Rick ND. Given the list of potential candidates, what is most likely to happen? One, Notre Dame gets a better OC. Two, Notre Dame gets an OC just as good. Or three, Notre Dame has to settle for an OC that won't be as good. And again, I want to commend our subscribers for their questions today, because I think they've been really good and across the board. And the best way to get your question read on Irish Illustrated Insider is to what?
Set up an NIL deal, and we'll read it.
That would be one way, but being a subscriber to Irish Illustrated also helps your chances as well. Anyway, great question from the Rick ND. Hit it, guys.
They say 2-1-3. Just as good, most likely, better, and I don't think they'll settle for one who won't be as good.
I would go with 2-1-3, although it's going to be really, like, he's going to make a hire, and there's going to be a lot of coverage about how this is an upgrade, and we're not going to have any idea if it actually was.
Well,
for a year.
And if Marcus Freeman's overall recruiting continues to get better, then the stats will be better, and we will say,
oh,
he's a better offensive coordinator than Tommy Rees was.
I'd say the answer is two, but at the end of next season, we're all going to think the answer is one, but it's going to have more to do with Sam Hartman than whoever got hired.
Yeah.
I mean, could Notre Dame get a offensive coordinator better than Tommy Rees? Sure. I don't discount that. I mean, I didn't say Tommy Rees walked on water. I just didn't agree with some of the what became outrageous criticism at times from a play calling standpoint. That was always my point about that. But I mean, I would say 2-1-3 as well. but I don't see why Notre Dame's coordinating and play calling and coupled with the talent we think that they will have under Marcus Freeman could produce better results. I think we should probably expect that to happen.
I definitely expect Notre Dame to have a better offense next year. And I think Pete does too, but he's pointing out, will they have a better offense the following year?
I mean, over the long haul, but then you're going to counter. Nobody stays longer than in a couple of years. It's hard to answer all these questions within.
Here's what I would say. They need, whoever they hire will be better than Reese in the sense like they will not have these Stanford or Marshall games happen to them. Stanford in particular, which like Reese, if you got him in a private moment, would be like, I screwed that up. Like
that's going to happen. Navy.
That was not good, but I'd say like Stanford was like borderline unforgivable. Like that went down with like Michigan in 2019 or Miami. Yeah. Like what was that?
Marshall, you're getting beaten in the trenches, whether you should have been or not, you were getting beaten in the trenches. And so it became a very difficult game for them to win. I don't know what Stanford, that should not have happened.
No. Navy, they scored 35 points. Both halves matter. They scored 35 points against Navy. They did not do that against Stanford.
But, you know, a great, great coordinator mitigates some of what's going, you know, Navy threw, I mean, you know, the proverbial kitchen sink at them and they couldn't come up with, now part of that's on the quarterback. Part of that's on the, remember we were talking about running back blocking. There were several factors involved there, but ultimately it falls on the shoulders of the offensive coordinator, of course.
Final question is from Rye Guy 0917. While I know Reese has high coaching aspirations and the NFL might be the ultimate for him, over under 6.5 years on Reese coming back as head coach at Notre Dame. And I don't want to even begin talking about this with the math at 6.5 years. So how about this? Will Tommy Reese be a head coach at Notre Dame?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
But I will say leaving makes it more likely that he would.
If you have to throw math in here, you better go 12.5 years to 15.5 years.
The dude's 30 years old. There's a pretty long game. Reese could be the guy that replaces Freeman. The guy who replaces Freeman. That's what I meant to say.
That's what I think too. After an NFL career, he would have to think at age 48. He ever listens to this. He's 30 now. He's 48. Do I want to go reinvent myself in college? Is how long of an NFL career I think he'll have as a position coach or coordinator position.
Won't be covering that coaching search.
So why won't he be the head coach at Notre Dame? Because he will be a head coach in the NFL. I think he's more likely to be a head coach in the NFL than, I'm not even sure about that.
I was just saying, like, you have one job at Notre Dame versus every other job in football. Like, I'll take the field on that one.
Yeah. Good point.
I would say, okay, let's throw the field in. I think he's going to be in the NFL a lot longer than he'll ever be a college head coach.
In any capacity,
a college head football coach versus any capacity in the NFL. He'll be in the NFL longer than he is a college head football coach.
Yeah, I think he's an NFL guy, ultimately. I think that that's what he wants. Look, recruiting.
Ugh.
I loved coaching. If I would have had to recruit in high, oh my God, I know, like, people talk about coaches with such disdain because they're not good recruiters. Do you think recruiting is unsavory? It's an act. It's a performance. It's an ass kissing job that I think is, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it on this scale.
Jim Boeheim doesn't want to do it either. You heard about that recently?
Like, could I recruit as a Notre Dame baseball coach, a lesser sport? That would be different. Not that that's not competitive, but the level of demonstrating and acting I don't like it. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be fit for it. And I don't know how guys do it, quite frankly.
I'm just trying to get third graders to come out to play basketball.
See? Imagine.
I can't get them to come out from other schools, like just the school where my kid is.
How about you, O'Malley? How's your recruiting prowess?
Yeah, no, that would not go well for me. That would be a problem for you. Like, I do the old Spurrier approach. So, you coming? Got a lot of good players here, and you could help us out a lot. Nope. Well, what's wrong with you? Okay, bye. See ya. I don't care anymore. I would not take rejection well. I'd yell stupid things like, well, it was good enough for Stonebreaker, so what the hell's your problem, or something like that. And they would not take to me. It would be poor. Although I do think there's another avenue that might be able to help recruiting these days. The recruitment of players can be enticed. Not before they get to campus. Heaven forbid anybody gets any money for that. But the second they get on campus, I got a lot of money for them.
Not to promote something on another site other than Irish Illustrated, but if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, there we have a story, incredible detail on Jalen Rashada's NIL deal.
I was looking at that. Yeah.
Blew my mind. So I would encourage Irish Illustrated readers to read it and think about, like, how does Notre Dame fit into this new world of college recruiting?
Do we want to predict the Super Bowl and then move on down the road here? What's the line, Tim?
1.5 as of last night, I saw. I took my first look at it.
1.5 point favorite?
Eagles are 1.5 point favorite.
I live in a Patrick Mahomes house. Yeah. So I got to go with the Chiefs to cover.
I am going to take the Chiefs as well.
I am really torn on that game. Really torn. I've kind of bought into. Did you hear Julian Love talking about Nick Sirianni?
Yeah.
Well, do I go with the team that Julian Love thinks has the superior talent, or do I go with the one that might be a little bit more inclined to outcoach some of that talent?
I got to tell you, if this was Andy Reid without a Super Bowl versus Philly without a Super Bowl since he left, this would be a massive. Massive situation going on right now for Philly fans, as opposed to we're really proud of Andy Reid for getting a Super Bowl because we already got ours, so they don't care as much in that realm. But
I totally forgot about that part of the game.
It's a coin toss for me. I would go with the Chiefs.
I find that really hard, and since I usually pick my games on the day before a game, it's way before that. I don't have a prediction.
Jalen Hurts to score a touchdown. That's a good one, right? He's going to have to score a touchdown.
A touchdown is absolutely one of my bets.
Yes.
Yes. 100% on that one.
Okay. And then Travis Kelce, because he rolls out of bed and scores a touchdown. So that also works out for him.
That's my bet so far in the Super Bowl this weekend. Super Bowl 57. Is that right? I remember them all. How about you guys?
Starting with number magical 16, right?
Remember John Taylor catching a touchdown against the Broncos? There you go.
Yeah, let's keep this 49ers theme going here. This is good. Bengals, you got it.
I'm just ashamed to say that I grew up a 49ers fan only because, like, it pales in comparison to O'Malley, so I don't even count myself as a
49ers fan. You brought up John Taylor on a podcast. That's all that matters. That's
all right, good. Thank you.
All right, we're back next Tuesday on Valentine's Day. Is that correct, guys? Yeah,
that is correct.
Tuesday on Valentine's Day, February 14th. Thanks for joining us. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.
Here's another Irish tale from Do Dublin at dodublin.ie.
Have you ever felt uneasy signing a lease for a house or a car? You'll know a little how Arthur Guinness felt when in 1759 he signed a 9,000-year lease for the St. James Gate Brewery in Dublin. He was a shrewd businessman, of course, because over 250 years later, the annual payment remains just £45. Want to find out more? Be sure you do Dublin with Do Dublin Tours.